Realty Nation. It's your host, Abhi Golhar. Welcome to the Think Realty podcast. I have a treat for you. If you're a real estate investor, you're new, you're a pro, got to listen up here. The acquisition strategies that many of you have used from 2020 going into this year in 2021 may need to be diversified a little bit. I don't think it's good enough to be part of the bidding squad in bidding up properties just to acquire property, because you have to acquire property. I think that's a pretty good recipe for madness. But instead, you want to recognize what's happening in the marketplace. And our guest today, Eddie Speed, his thought is, well, maybe it's a crash in slow motion, but there's something that you can do about it, and it's called buying on terms. Eddie Speed is the founder of noteschool.com, and there's a lot there to unpack. Whether it's buying notes or just getting into the real estate business, you need to understand where notes fit into your arsenal, into your tool belt, because it can, quite frankly, in 2021, be one of the biggest tools that you'll go to all year. That being said, we're going to bring Eddie on in just a second, but I want to give a huge shout out to the sponsor for today's podcast, Marco Santarelli and Narada Real Estate Investments, your premier source for cash flow investment property. Visit www.naradarealestate.com to learn more. All right, Eddie, welcome to the show, man. Good to see you. Happy New Year. I think there's a lot to talk about here, and I hope I did the introduction some justice, but if I didn't, and in case I didn't, now give us a little background on who you are and a Colonial and Note School.
Well, I started out in the industry. I was a note guy, right? Buying seller finance notes. Started in 1980, so a long time ago.
Yeah.
somewhere within the first decade in the business, I started realizing that coaching real estate investors creative financing strategies was a way to for me to go build my note business. In fact, in the first 10 years in the business is when I met Ken D'Angelo, the guy that founded HomeVestors. And then the second decade in the business is when I set up the whole note system for HomeVestors franchises and really lots of other real estate investors. So I've been helping real estate investors with like really dialing in on how creative financing would apply in their business and like what are the best practices for that for decades.
So when it comes to creative financing, what does that, help me understand that world a little bit for those investors that are not familiar with it, because they might be all in on rentals or they may be all in on fix and flips. But what does it mean to creatively finance a deal?
Well, it's a big header, right?
Yeah.
So it could mean all of these things. It could mean, how do you get a seller to carry financing from you that's way more favorable than a bank or a mortgage lender would carry, right? How do you get them to carry soft terms, right? That's creative financing. It could be, how do you resell property with owner financing, right? What criteria do I develop if I'm going to be my own bank? What down payment, what interest rate, how do I qualify somebody? How do I market the property? That could be creative financing. Another creative financing strategy, one that you happen to love, is how do I go buy a note at a discount from somebody that's carried financing, owner financing, and I buy their loan at a discount and turn around and use a private investor, a passive investor to basically fuel buying that whole note for me, and then I own residual payments. All of that is creative financing.
So I love that world. To me, that is just amazing. I am a terrible fix and flipper. I don't like working with my hands. I like typing on a keyboard. That's kind of the most I'm going to do with my hands. But I'm not going to pick up a sledgehammer. It's not me. I don't do that kind of thing. So when it comes to buying notes from sources, from people that are either selling them to gain control of a cash flow stream, because that's ultimately the goal here, what are some of the ways to do that? How do you find these deals?
Well, real estate investors, there's about 100,000 seller finance notes created every year. Okay, so there's more inventory of seller finance notes than people think there is, right? And then secondly, once you create that inventory, how do you find who did it, right? It could be a mom and pop that just owner financed a single property. It could be somebody that owned a business and sold the business and also sold the real estate to the guy that bought the business. He could owner finance his property. Or it could be a real estate investor, right? So those are the categories of people that are prone to seller finance. So if I'm in a real estate investor and I'm in a network of real estate investors, I go to meetups or RIAs or wherever they all hang out, right? Those could be people that have notes. Or I could use courthouse research and find people that have notes. Or I could just advertise. I could use the internet, or I could use, you know, other forms of communication. So those are common threads of how people find notes. And I know that that's where always people jump to, Abhi, first. But what I would say is I've learned to slow it down and say, what's a good note? And then you get a better sense of what note to go chase.
That's fair. So if I'm an investor, how do I identify what I should be looking for in a note anyway? Is it a 15-year term? Should I be okay with a 30-year term? Should I be paying a little bit of a discount on the note? Is it information on the payer, the credit of the payer? Does that even matter? How do I do some initial due diligence on that?
Well, it's a waterfall of things that I think are essential things for people to understand to enter this space. I've bought 50,000 notes in my career. Okay. I've looked at probably 400,000. Okay. Why didn't I buy 400,000? If you buy 50,000 notes, you kind of assume that you have competitive pricing, right? Yeah. There's sort of a presumption that you can offer a fair market price for, you can't have closed that many and not do that. But what I found is that so many people showed me notes that were junk, right? And they didn't create good notes. And then they went to secondary market, somebody like me who was a known buyer for these notes. And then I don't want to buy it because they created kind of a pile of junk. Right. So I tell people, whether you're buying a note or you're creating seller financing when you're selling a property, it's all the same thing. Right. And the idea is that I'd have to get out of people's mind. Somehow people think sometimes seller financing is always substandard. The property substandard, the buyer substandard. And let me just tell you something. Just because you can't get a Fannie Mae loan today does not make you substandard.
That's a good point.
You and I were talking before the show started. Of course, you and I know each other, and you've done classes with us, and so you're following a good trail because you sort of know where this leads, right?
Yep.
But one of the things that we were talking about is like, what's the market and what's going on?
Yep.
And right now, I believe we're in a false market, right?
Why do you say that?
Well, there's a shortage of listings. It's just as simple as that. There's just a shortage of listings. Yep. We have a shortage of listings. Real estate's on fire. And every time a realtor gets a property, they get 8 offers on it. And they're sort of fighting in the front yard, so to speak. And we think that defines all of real estate.
Yeah.
Right? Let me just tell you something. If we learned anything from the last cycle, being able to measure shadow inventory became the most critical ingredient in measuring where the market was going, right? Shadow inventory of the properties that aren't on the market yet.
Yes.
They haven't been foreclosed yet. They haven't been forced to put it on the market. So we've got an amazing level of shadow inventory, okay? So everybody loves to talk about forbearance. Oh, forbearance. And when all these people that are in forbearance, Eddie, all they're going to do is put their payments on the backside of the loan. And that's what they did in the last cycle. And that's what they're going to do this time. Okay. Right. Well, let me just tell you this. There's about 2.7 million people today that are in forbearance. Mm-hmm. The problem is those people in forbearance, about half of what there was a few months ago, those people probably aren't fixable. To modify a loan and put their payments on the backside of the loan, you know they passed this law called Dodd-Frank, right?
Yeah.
They actually have to qualify for a modification.
Right.
It's not extend and pretend.
Right. So out of the 2.7, you're saying half are fixable?
No. I don't know, but nobody in mortgage banking believes that.
Okay. How many are fixable?
20%.
Okay.
Okay. Why are people not talking about the bigger pile of loans that are problematic at the moment?
I don't know why.
Uninformed?
I guess.
There's 3.9 million loans today that are delinquent that are not in forbearance.
So on top of the 2.7, there's an additional 3.9 that are delinquent.
Yes.
Interesting. Okay.
So once again, I have discovered that a little bit of the real estate industry, like if you read mortgage banker rags, like DS News and Housing Wire and all those rags, and I'm sure you do.
Obviously. Yeah.
This is in their rags every week. They write about this daily. This isn't like some big secret Eddie Speed knows. I just come from a mortgage banking loan servicing world as well as a note buyer. So I run in circles of people that service and manage all these assets. And it's this common in our business. It's a common conversation. You get over in the real estate investing world, the other side of this fence that you and I spend a lot of time in.
Yeah.
I speak to high volume real estate investors every day that don't know those stats. But see, there's another problem. Those are problematic loans. Okay. By the way, they're not going to end up in short sales.
That's fair. Yeah. I mean,
they have equity.
Exactly. Some of these homes are appreciating between 9, 10, 11% a year for the last many years.
Yeah. Well, these people that can't make their payment, they also aren't painting the fence. You do understand that, right?
Yeah, I get that. But worst case scenario, they can sell and they'll still take a little, put a little cash in their pocket.
They can. And the reality is that is shadow inventory yet to hit the market. Okay. But there's another big thing out there I don't hear people talking about.
What's that?
The burnout landlord, the hobbyist landlord.
I thought you were going to say COVID-20.
Yeah, they're talking plenty about that. So here's some basic stats.
Okay.
Okay. There's 23 million residential doors in the United States.
Okay.
Okay. These are 1 to 4 units. These are not multifamily. These are 1 to 4 units, 23 million. A sliver of them are owned by hedge funds. Everybody thinks the hedge funds own the market.
They don't.
It's just no statistical.
It's a super small percentage. Yeah.
All right. And by the way, they only like A-grade properties, right? So if people think the hedge funds are going to buy all the lower grade properties, there's nothing that leads us down that trail from a thought process.
Right.
So let me give you some quick numbers. 72% of that whole number are people that own 1 to 5 units in their individual name. They don't own an LLC. They don't own it in a trust. They own it in their individual name.
Okay.
That's 17 million. A 16.9.
Okay.
75% of those people self-manage their own units. That is what I call a hobbyist landlord.
That is a hobbyist landlord.
And his lack of rent collections doubles what the professionals have experienced.
So what's the note opportunity with them?
Hell, why wouldn't the owner finance me and sell me the house?
Yeah, it makes sense.
Right. And if it is equity over time, and you're saying, well, why would you agree to buy it when he's not collecting rent? I would bake in a forbearance agreement in the buy that says I don't owe him money until I'm able to collect money. He's no worse off than he is right now. I'm just going to solve his problem.
So then why would he sell you this property on terms? Kind of going back to...
he's sick of it before the virus. He's really sick of it now. He's avoiding divorce. Because the truth of the matter is, people watch HGTV and think owning a rent property is cool.
Yeah.
And they wake up and find out that they made an investment and bought a job.
So you could buy on terms.
This is a giant.
So how do you market to these people?
Well, I mean, buying of landlords is available by a number of probably people that you have on the show. I mean, you know, their data sources. I mean, pulling a data tape of people that own a rental and doing a campaign to them is, I mean, that's pretty much real estate investing 101. It's not the mystery of marketing to them. It's the specificity of understanding the messaging of who you're marketing to.
So I'm thinking about that. So, from the note perspective, when I'm looking at buying notes, because a lot of investors, a lot of folks that are watching this, they're thinking, okay, I understand the fix and flip side. I understand the rental side. Note side is still a little confusing. But essentially what you're saying is, not only is there shadow inventory that nobody's talking about, but there's opportunity to work with these potential sellers to buy on terms, create a potentially cash flow positive situation for yourself, take away their pain, and Note School can teach you how to get there.
We teach people how to buy the property on soft terms. Then you could rent it, or if you don't want to rent it, you could resell it on a wrap note with owner financing. Right?
Yep.
And right now, we have a very interesting scenario. The availability of the deserving buyer is the highest level of availability that we've had since 2010.
Yes.
And that is because mortgage banking and the real estate industry are not on the same page about the future of real estate.
Why is that? What do you think the future of real estate is?
Well, you can Google this. You just go to the Mortgage Bankers Association. They do every month, they do a graph called the mortgage credit availability.
Okay.
Look at that graph. It screams. It basically says this. If 1,000 people could get a mortgage last February, 650 people can get a mortgage today.
That's nuts.
It's a fact.
That's nuts.
And you know me, Abhi. I have a heart for people to make informed decisions. And I feel like we're in a market where people are making emotional decisions that aren't supported by facts.
It's happening a lot right now.
And so I'm like, I'm just too old to start over. Dude, I'm 61 years old. Why the hell would I want to go start over?
No, you wouldn't. I don't want to at this point.
So I see that there's a big opportunity, and I teach buying on terms specifically from burnout landlords, and I teach in some very high volume real estate investor masterminds, mm-hmm. right? So I run a circle of guys that are probably the top 500 guys in the business. I would say 300-ish of them have been to Note School in the last couple of years, right? So a lot of those guys, and I'm like, here's the drill down. Here's what you chase. And because real estate investors, what makes you better than a realtor?
Everything. Vision. Well, vision, the toolbox.
It ain't price.
Yes, this is true.
Okay, well, if you ask the average consumer, then you're number two and a realtor's number one.
Right. Yeah, good point.
Okay, so what I'm saying is, is it if you can't be clear in your mind of how to solve a problem, then your entrepreneurial endeavor has a gap in it. Right? So
yeah.
I can find a person with a very definable demographic that has a real estate, listen to this, Abhi, they have a real estate problem. And I know how to solve it.
So that's why you go to note school. I got you. That makes sense. All right. So unfortunately, we don't have a whole lot more time. But we got to have you back because the shadow inventory conversation is only going to get worse from what I'm understanding. And there are a few more tools that we have yet to talk about that are in my notes that we didn't get to today that we need to talk about. So maybe in the next quarter, we'll have you back. But what I'd like maybe 30 seconds on is, what do I need to know to be a part of this note school thing? Because clearly there are a lot of investors out there that are missing out on this kind of information to help bolster their business or at least add an additional tool to help them get a deal that they wouldn't normally take a look at. Because for whatever reason, they're discarding deals that are in their inbox because they just don't fit the usual mold they're going after. So how do I get in touch? How do I say hi? How do I get involved?
All right, so I'm going to give your listeners a lane to go down that I think is the perfect next step.
Awesome.
And it's very simple. It's just go to noteschool.com/get-started.
Okay.
Okay? I'm going to give them two things. I'm going to give them a book that's a 50-page book. So it's not a super long read, but it's written on purpose very concisely. There's six chapters, and we unfold this story pretty good. And then in addition to that, I'm going to give them about an hour and a half workshop. And the hour and a half workshop is we're going to like be able to unpack examples so that people, oh, I saw a deal that would be like that one. You see what I'm saying? In other words, we're going to unpack like, where is it? Like, is it a crazy thing to say, Abhi, that you literally could double your conversions if you used creative financing? The answer is, I think, yeah, you could.
I probably could. I need more of this in my life. That's for sure. So noteschool.com/get-started or getting started?
Get started.
Get started. noteschool.com/get-started. Eddie, man, I owe you a phone call, and we got to talk, brother. There's a lot here to unpack. So I certainly appreciate the time in jumping on the show with me. It's always a hoot and a half to have you. So I appreciate that. Well, cool. noteschool.com/get-started is where you need to go. Eddie, thanks so much. Appreciate the time. Think Realty Nation, the next segment is brought to you by Security National Mortgage and Aaron Chapman. Bypass all the overcomplications of the common suit and tie mortgage guy and connect with Aaron Chapman and his team of real estate investment finance expert at Security National Mortgage. No fluff, no complicated industry speak, just brutally direct action. Check them out today, www.aaronbchapman.com. So let's talk about becoming an accredited investor and the opportunities that you can get if you're an accredited investor. Frankly, you're an accredited investor by definition. You have the ability, you can stomach taking a little more risk and losing a little more money. So that's why the SEC says if you earn over $200,000 a year, then you know what? You can go ahead and take on this risk. The problem is just because you have earned the money, either by yourself or together with your spouse, doesn't necessarily mean that you have the mindset or the chops to go take on the risk. So where do you go find these folks? Where do you go find these opportunities? It's not like you can just Google them and say, I'm looking for accredited investor opportunities. It doesn't work like that. So in a recent article written by Ellis Hammond on thinkrealty.com titled Becoming an Accredited Investor, talks about a couple of options on where you can find qualified operators to find your next deal where you can invest in. The first place is AAPL, the American Association of Private Lenders. Their nationwide conference in Las Vegas is one that you absolutely have to go to, and it's the industry standard for where lenders need to be and for where you can find opportunities. So I would start there. Second, he mentions LinkedIn. Third, podcast. I'm going to shamelessly plug the Think Realty podcast because, you know, why wouldn't you? Number four, real estate conferences like the Think Realty one that's coming up in March 26th to 27th. See? See what I did there? Yes, you did. And last but not least, real estate attorneys. Real estate attorneys are doing deals and they're drawing up paperwork on a regular basis. And you know as well as I do that they probably know who you should talk to and who the leader in their local community is, or who is the player that has the most real estate deals in the city, whichever city you live in. So go start talking to some of these real estate attorneys, and you might just find that next opportunity if you're an accredited investor to sink your money into. And make that money grow, please. That's helpful. Okay, that's the show. If you have any questions, get in touch. You know how to do it. Go to thinkrealty.com. Check out the previous shows, all that jazz, because all of this information is important, and you need it, because that's just the way it works. Got to give a shout out to Marco Santorelli, Nerada Real Estate Investments, for sponsoring this podcast. We can't do this without you guys, so thank you very much. Nerada Real Estate Investments is your premier source for cash flow investment property. Check them out. Go to www.neradarealestate.com. We're here for you as always, and until next time, happy investing.